So continuing with dressing and worshiping the Lord. Then we have number 24, offering a Gayatri thread, Upavita. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, obviously you should offer the Lord his sacred thread before putting on his upper garments. The thread should consist of 9 strands of white or yellow cotton or silk. Or alternatively, it may contain 3 strands of cotton or silk, 3 of silver and 3 of gold. Now you may decorate the Lord's forehead with vertical urdhvapundra tilak. So then in a footnote, the word tilak is generic, referring to all kinds of auspicious decorations painted on the body, one of which is the urdhvapundra mark worn by the Lord and his devotees. As Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we decorate Krishna with Gaudiya Vaishnav urdhvapundra, namely 2 thin vertical lines joined at the base with a tulsi leaf shape. Traditionally, Srimati Radharani wears only the red sindur dot on her forehead and not the urdhvapundra mark. See, this says here, see conversation with Srila Prabhupada, Tokyo, 22nd April 1972.
I've seen Krishna just
I think that they do that. I've seen that when they put the red, when they use the kumkum. Then many times they just put the urdhvapundra without the tulsi. But when they put the gopi chandan, you know, the yellow, or Krishna would use gorochana, which is yellow, basically same color as tilak, a little more yellow. Then you would see with the tulsi leaf. So Krishna wears both the red and the yellow tilak. But Radharani only wears the sindur dot. You know, hers is musk, and then it has other things in it like that. You know, and then I think in the middle is the sindur, but the outside is musk. You know, musk is only, you know, something like, forget what the price is. But it's something outrageous, so. We can just stick to the red cinder dot. Yes. Okay. Then Krishna Kshetra continues, you may also mark the deity's arms, sides, and throat with urdhvapundra. In addition, you may now apply decorative tilak designs on the Lord's forehead, cheek, arms, hands, and feet. Tilak may be mixed with natural coloring agents such as turmeric or kumkum, as well as plain watercolors, and applied with a blunt gold or silver stick, or with a twig from a tulsi plant. So you can use something, in other words, when the tilak, then you can put the others also. The urdhvapundra means these markings in the 12 places on the body, and then you can put other tilak designs for decoration. In other words, there's tilak. Within tilak, there's urdhvapundra. So on ourselves, generally, we're only wearing the urdhvapundra, so we just say tilak. We don't say urdhvapundra tilak. But then these others where you make, like we call gopi dots, that's also tilak. Like that. So tilak just means any design that's painted on the body with these, you know, various kinds of natural minerals or other like, you know, paste, like, what do you call it? Sandalwood, or musk, or, you know, they use this, so many oxides and different things they use. And, or like the, what do you call it? Yeah, gopi chandan clays. You get the red clay, like they use the rock dye, like that, these different things. Then, yeah. One must be very careful when painting not to, you know, put too much pressure or poke or anything, but always remember is that it should, you know, for drawing nicely on Krishna's body. It says in, I think, Nectar Devotion that Krishna's skin is so delicate that even you take a new leaf, you know, when they're still purple, they're so soft. If you touch Krishna's skin with it, it'll leave a little bit of a mark. His skin is so delicate. So one should always keep in mind to be very, very careful. Then 25, offering Achman again after dressing, Punarachman. Then a note, in Vedic culture one performs Achman after dressing as a means of purification. But that also goes along with the Gayatri thread, Upavita. Because then at that time putting that, then the Lord can say it's Gayatri. So that Achman also goes with the Gayatri, with the Brahman thread means to putting the Gayatri. But you're not going to be chanting your Gayatri without having your clothes on, right? So that means you're putting the clothes, the thread, the tilak, chanting Gayatri. I mean, putting the, you know, for the deity. But at that time, that's when you deal with your Gayatri and then chant. 26. Applying Gandha to the Lord's feet with a tulsi leaf, Anulephana. Srila Prabhupada writes, nicely scented oils like liquid sandalwood pulp should be smeared all over the body of the deity. Madhulita 24:334 purport. Gandha refers to sandalwood paste, which may be mixed with other ingredients. You may apply it to the Lord's whole body or to his feet, heart, and forehead. After applying Gandha, you may fan the Lord to increase the cooling effect. Gandha may be applied with the middle and ring fingers, or with the thumb and little finger joined. One could also use flour, or if you want to draw designs with it, then you could use like that a tulsi stick or some other. Do not smear sandalwood, camphor, or any other cooling item when the weather is cool on the Lord's forehead, although you may draw designs with sandalwood paste and use it to apply tulsi leaves to his feet. Idea is that the Gandha is for creating a cooling effect. So when it's cold, then that should be done very minimally, just with the tulsi leaves or to make a few designs. But one should not use it a lot on the Lord's body. Like that, it's not uncommon that, means in the summertime, one takes the sandalwood paste and smears it very nicely on the upper portion of the body. Keeps cool. The sandalwood paste also removes the hot airs from the body. Like that. So it's very, that's why after eating, then they'll take, you know, from the head and all that, because the digestion process sometimes creates, you know, movements of the wind or the bile, and it can put pressure on the head. So they put sandalwood paste after eating, like that. So it's interesting here, nicely scented oils like liquid sandalwood pulp. So this explains why it is known as the Gandha, or the scent, because it's the sandalwood paste. So you get sandalwood oil from the sandalwood. You take the wood, they distill the wood, they get the oil. Right? So if you just take the wood and grind it into a paste, it contains the oil. But it's in such a way that it doesn't make things all oily in that, but you can take it, smear it on the body, and you get even a more cooling effect. Like that, rather than just the smell, the scent. So the idea of the Gandha is it creates scent, but it also has other effects on the body. So generally, the Gandha means the sandalwood paste, either alone or with other things in it. Sandalwood paste, you can put camphor, you can put saffron, you can put musk, aguru, or combinations of this, I think in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Then there's one very famous combination that when Sanatana Goswami was going to Puri, then he contracted this kind of like skin disease. He had open sores and all that. So Lord Chaitanya used to come and used to embrace him. And then Sanatana Goswami felt very bad because the Lord's body was touching these sores. So when questioned about it, Lord Chaitanya mentioned that to him it was like this particular mix of sandalwood paste, musk, aguru, and camphor. But it tells in there the proportion, so many parts of this, so many parts of this. That makes a particular, particular combination. So it's generally, you'll see sandalwood paste is the basis for the scents. Tulsi leaves and buds, then it mentions here. Now you should offer tulsi leaves to the Lord's lotus feet. Among all the articles offered to the Lord, tulsi is the most highly praised. Indeed, a devotee may worship the Lord Yeah, perfectly simply, by offering him pure water and tulsi leaves. You may offer tulsi leaves only to Vishnu Tattva deities, but you may place tulsi leaves in the spiritual masters and Srimati Radharani's right hands, so they may offer them to the Lord. You may also place them on the food offerings on the spiritual masters and Srimati Radharani's plates, with the understanding that they will offer the food to Krishna before taking it themselves. Both the Garuda Puran and Brihan Naradiya Puran state that tulsi leaves must always be placed on the Naivedya, the food being offered. Quote, without tulsi, anything done in the way of puja, bathing, and offering of food and drink to the Lord cannot be considered real puja, bathing, or offering. The Lord does not accept any worship or eat or drink anything that is without tulsi. So that means everything should be offered. That's also like in the Achman cup. Tulsi is put in the Achman cup. So therefore, when you take water and put it onto the various items, then they are with tulsi. Some of the sampradayas, you know, take it where they actually put a tulsi leaf on the lamp and then offer it, and the tulsi leaf on each item before offering. But for us, we keep tulsi leaves in the Achman cup, and then that Achman cup, when that water is sprinkled on the item, then it has that benefit. But for the Naivedya, then, and in the bathing water, then there should be tulsi. It can be either, but especially the one for the deities, the deities Achman cup, Visheshargya. That should have tulsi, the bathing water, because you're installing the deity in that water. If tulsi leaves are abundant, you may offer the Lord a tulsi garland. Alternatively, tulsi leaves or manjaris may be woven into the Lord's flower garlands. Like that. So one can offer two. Did you get into flowers yet? Yeah, no, that's coming. Okay, so then tulsi garlands can also be done. So all tulsi must at least be on the feet and put with some chandan. If the deities it depends upon if they are made out of neem or something, then one has to see if the paint is such that one can do that. Otherwise, then one just touch them, but then connect, you know, put them on the Lord's feet, either just place them there so they sit, or put them under the ankle bells or something so that they stay on the feet. But on the Astadatu and on the, you know, stone, marble deities, then no problem with putting with the sandalwood paste. Okay. Also here, the point is on the spiritual master's plate, Srimati Radharani's plate, the devotee's plate, one can put tulsi as bhoga offering with the understanding they're going to offer it to Krishna. So one can put, not put, doesn't really matter. Like that. When Srila Prabhupada is present, then personally he wouldn't accept. I mean, like that, it wasn't done. But in the deity form, then there's not a problem. 27. Decorating the Lord with jewelry, alankara. Alankara. The Chaitanya Charitamrita states, all kinds of ornaments and crowns should be placed on the body. Madhya Lila 24.334 purport. Okay, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, take care whenever performing artik to first check to see that the deity's ornaments are properly in place, especially crowns and ear ornaments, before opening the curtain. Also take care when removing any ornaments which are held with adhesive materials such as putty or beeswax to also remove all of the adhesive from the deity's body. That when you are putting, especially if you're using this blue tack, previously they would use beeswax. But beeswax means then you have to kind of warm it by dealing with it for a while. And, you know, so it takes a little bit more time. The adhesive nature, once it's set, is very, very strong. But sometimes if there's a little bit of oil or something, or it's getting old, it doesn't stick as well. But otherwise, especially if you're sticking eyes on the deities, or any kind of like permanent kind of fixture, any kind of ornament, then that should always be done with beeswax, like that. One of the things they also do, you see in the Goswami deities, because they have the conch eyes, so they're fixed with beeswax. They mix kumkum with the beeswax, so it becomes red. So then you get that red, reddish color around the Lord's eyes. Like that. But if you're using that or blue tack, that when you take it off, you should take the time to go back and rub and get all the blue tack, so you don't have little bits and pieces of blue tack, you know, all over the place. Like that. Okay, so then means once you put the crowns, once you put the ornaments, and, you know, according to the occasion, according to how the deity looks very beautiful, you'll find different deities look very nice with different kinds of arrangements, depending upon their size, depending upon their just depending upon the various situations, how they look. Then they look nice, you know, especially nice with certain kinds of ornamentation, or also depends upon how you're doing. If you're doing a lot with the clothes, you don't have to do as much with the ornaments. If the clothes are more simple, one might find more ornaments. Or if there's lots of flowers, then we might find less, you need to put less ornaments. There was one pujari in Vrindavan who would dress very, very opulently with the clothes and the garlands. And he would never use more than one strand of pearls as a necklace. He'd have one around the neck, like neck beads, one strand hanging around the neck, and sometimes you would put a strand around one of the foot, or put you know, a single jewel on one finger as a ring or on a toe. And that was all. But, you know, very elaborate turbans and garlands and cloth. But you would never think, oh, there's no ornaments. Like that. So one has to balance depending upon the arrangements that you have. Also here he mentions, make sure all the ornaments are in place, especially small Krishna. When there's a boga offering, then generally one takes the flute out. One has to make sure the flute is put back. Before the offering, one must always check that no crowns or earrings or that have fallen off. It's better to do that before the artik than open and then find out that it's not there and then close again. Okay. Then offering flowers to the Lord, Vichitra Divya Pushpa. One should offer flowers face up when offering them singly, but this rule does not apply when offering many flowers. Like you have a plate and you put a handful of flowers on it. If one or two are upside down, that's no problem. But if you're offering singly, it has to be right side up. You know, there's not a whole lot happening on the bottom of a flower. Generally the smell and the looks are on the top. So if you have a whole pile of them, then if a few are upside down, it's not so important. But if too many are upside down, one may turn them over to make it look attractive. Whenever the deity moves from one position to another, first offer him the shoes, and then as an act of submission, offer Pushpanjali, flowers offered between joined palms. Pushpanjali may be offered to the deity's head, heart, navel, lotus feet, and entire body. So depending upon the size of the deity and the occasion, then Pushpanjali, especially if they're light, fine flowers, Pushpanjali can also just be offered on top of the deity. So it's like a shower of flowers, or shown in front of it, and then at the level of the heart, then poured from there, or, you know, from the navel, or at his feet. Is that understood? Like that. Is that, it just depends upon the size and that. And, yeah, that's all. You can offer garlands either now or during, oh, yeah, Okay, then at this point, then one can either offer the garlands now during dressing and ornament, which... Oh, I see. What he's meaning is now, after you've done all the dressing ornamentation, now you can put the garlands. Or if it's more convenient, the garland can be put earlier, like that, if it's needed for when you're doing the dressing. So one has to see which will be the most convenient time to put. Depends on the type of garlands and all this kind of thing. Srila Prabhupada writes in his Nectar Devotion, Krishna used to put a Vaijayanti garland around his neck. This Vaijayanti garland is made of flowers and at least five different colors, of at least five different colors. Such a garland was always long enough to touch Krishna's knees or feet. Besides this garland of flowers, there were other kinds of flower garlands too. Sometimes decorating his head, sometimes hanging around his neck and chest. Krishna is sometimes called Vanamali. Vana means forest and Mali means gardener. So Vanamali refers to one who extensively uses flowers and garlands on different parts of his body. Krishna was dressed like this not only in Vrindavan, but also on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It's from Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. So Krishna is always, this is his move, he likes flowers. He likes flowers better than very, you know, nice ornaments. You know? And of flowers, then he is especially fond of these Tulsi Manjaris, like that. So then, yeah. So this five different colors means that they are, you can see on like Indian paintings in this, that it basically means the garland is predominantly white, because white flowers generally have the most smell, at least in India. The pure white flowers are the ones generally that have the strongest fragrances. All your jasmines and bay leaves and all these kind of things are white. So it would be predominantly a white garland. And then at various points, then there would be a section where you would have all these different colors generally in symmetry. You know, it would be, you know, one color on the ends means you have a little section. So the ends of the section will be one color. Then you move towards the middle, that would be another color. Then the very middle would be another color, like this. So that would have four colors in it. And then you would have the main body of the garland would be white. So like that, you'd have white, and then you'd have one of these sections that have many colors in it. Then another, also they would use leaves. You take leaves and fold them. You can put them in. That gives also different colors. Like this. So like that they would do many interesting things. It doesn't just mean you take five kinds of flowers and just put them on, you know, potpourri, you know, like that, and just whatever you end up with. But it would be actually designed, you know, the garland like that. Then you can put them in his turban. He would wear them on his, you know, like wristbands or armlets on his feet. Smaller garlands, it says here, around his neck. So like that, you can put many, many garlands. Or in various ways. Different sizes, thicknesses, like that. Okay. Then we have offering incense, dhupa, what? Speak louder. Means that you're going through Lord Chaitanya, I mean, through the spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, who is none other than Radha and Krishna, and Radha and Krishna then have expanded as Lakshmi Narayan. So it's like you're going up and then coming down. Like that. You understand? So you're understanding that it is, it means, in other words, one could go spiritual master Lord Chaitanya Nrisingadev. Like that means you're approaching the Lord in this. But then by doing this, where then one worships Radha and Krishna and then comes to Nrisingadev, that brings out the point of Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa. The Keshava has come as Nrisingadev. That's the whole idea. And that as Krishna expands and Radharani expands, so she has come as Lakshmi. Like that. It just depends on whether you want to bring out that point or not. So the worship of Radha and Krishna as part of the Purvanga Karma to worshipping Nrisingadev, that is optional. You know? It just depends upon if you want to bring that point out more. Otherwise, then you can just go Lord Chaitanya, the spiritual master Lord Chaitanya, and then Nrisingadev. Like that, or any Vishnu Murti. Yes. Lemons and tomatoes, and put an app. They call it. You can put some lettuce, a few olives, some feta cheese, like that. A few stuffed capsicums, like that. I'm not sure on the lemons specifically. I think I've seen. I'm not sure if I've seen on deities lemons. Sometimes I think it's when you do the style of garland where it doesn't connect. It goes like over the head, around the shoulders, and hangs down on the side. I think at the very end, sometimes they might put a lemon. Like that. But lemons are specifically for what's coming up, this next point here. Drishti. Like that. Now let's read this next section, and then it'll make a little more sense. We haven't even got to these yet. Yeah, we still haven't done that. Just means it dispels inauspicious influences. Like that, the lemons in there. The apples, the tomatoes, that I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the tomatoes and the garlands have come from. Like that. Yeah, maybe. You know, baked potatoes, you know, like that. There's so many. But I've seen in South, there's a tradition of offering a garland of wadas. To Hanuman. You know, you see this 18, 20 foot tall deity of Hanuman, and then you see about a 12 foot long garland of, you know, big, you know, six inch wadas that have been made into a garland, and he's wearing that. I guess it's, you know, wada? Wada is like, they take dal and grind it, soak it and grind it into a paste. And then they make a donut shape. Huh? Yeah, and then they deep fry them. Like that. So for Hanuman, they don't make those small ones, like, you know, they make these real big ones. Huh? Vadai. Yeah. So then, I mean, the small ones have a different name? Huh? Means you have to have that. Yeah. Also for Hanuman, Ladu garlands. Yeah, like that. Because he's a monkey, he likes to eat things. So you put the garland on, he'll eat it. Just like if you take a garland and offer it, you know, a regular garland, put it on an elephant, it'll take it off and eat it. Or a cow, they'll take it off and eat it. So Hanuman, you give him, he's not into eating flowers, so you give him a garland made out of wadas, and he can eat that. And, you know, he'll be happy. But where the other things have come in, I'm not sure, you know. You know, apple I can understand, lemon I can understand, tomato I cannot understand. You know, because tomatoes have a tendency to be kind of like soft and mushy and soggy and, you know, so. But lemons are okay, because lemons are for dispelling any kind of bad, I'd say, inauspicious influences. That's what the lemons are for. Like you go to, sometimes people's shops or in the taxi, you'll see there's a lemon and a few green chilies and that's hanging there. Like that, that's for anybody, you know, has any bad feelings or anything, then it gets attracted to the lemon there. And then when it dries up, they throw it out and hang a new one. I'm not sure what the chilies are for, but...
Just to...
Maybe. Huh? Peels means? You've seen apple peels in a garland? Oh, I haven't seen that one. Apple peels. I don't know. Maybe. Lemons, I know, is very much a tradition, because they'll use that in, at least you'll see that a lot, especially in South. They use the lemons for different drishtis. They'll chant mantras, invite all the ghosts into the lemon, and then throw the lemon into the yajna fire. And then after a few moments, the thing explodes, and then all the ghosts, hit, head for the hills, you know. Things like that, or they put them under the tires of the carts before they start. Things, you know, I've seen lemons used a lot for that. But, maybe apple peels, and pineapple peels, watermelon peels. Or you can have a real good one from his place. You use a durian peel. Huh? That will keep more than just the ghosts away. Durian. It seems to be a distant kind of like, how you say, a distant, yeah, very distant relative of the jackfruit. Well, the jackfruit is considered Havishya. It's very much in the mode of goodness. So this is, by having crossed the ocean, kind of lost some of those subtle aspects of the mode of goodness. Like that. The general description of it is, tastes like heaven, smells like hell. Like that. So it's a big ball, like the size of a basketball, and it's got these huge thorns on it, about 2 inches long and about half inch, 3/4 inch wide. The whole thing's covered with it. And it's got a stem coming out of it just like on a banana tree trunk. So you could pick the thing up and probably have a pretty good fight with it. If you don't hit him with the durian, then the smell will get him. So you're guaranteed success.
The king of fruit in Malaysia.
Huh?
King of fruit. In
Malaysia, it's the king of fruit. Yeah, very famous. Though it's illegal to bring it on airplane flights or take it into hotels.
Once my friend did like that. We open everything, put it inside a box, how nice it is. And then come to inside the airport, the checking, and then take back, say cannot enter.
No, durian cannot enter because the smell is so strong. When it gets into the central air conditioning, it wipes out the whole plane. Okay, enough of this diversion. Number 29, offering incense, dhup. Srila Prabhupada writes in his Nectar of Devotion, when the devotees smell the good fragrance of the incense which is offered to the deity, they thus become cured of the poisonous effects of material contamination, as much as one becomes cured of a snake bite by smelling the prescribed medicinal herbs. Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 9, quoted from the Hari Bhakti Shuddha Doi. Okay. Yeah. Then Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, in addition to the scheduled aroti, incense may be offered at any time of the day. However, do not light incense when offering bhoga, since the aroma of food is an important element in its enjoyment. It should not be cancelled by the incense aroma. After the Lord has taken his meal, you may offer incense, especially as part of the artik. You may offer varied types of incense at different times of the day. So ideally you pick incense that has a very pleasant, nice smell, according to your budget, but try to keep to something that's as natural as possible. But especially during the bhoga offerings, then one should be very careful about burning incense, especially if it is a chemical incense, because the smell is so strong that it kind of overpowers the subtleties of the taste of what is being offered. Many times you see in temples they always light incense just for the offering, but you know, unless it's something very, very subtle and very, very pure, then it's better to light, you know, throughout the day, and then as soon as the offering is over, then light incense. And that can be there, and then at Artik one can offer more incense like that. Okay. Number 30, offering lamps deep. Offering lamps to the deity is highly auspicious, both for the one who offers and for those observing. The lamp is considered the main offering of the Artik ceremony. A camphor lamp may be offered as a single deep before the ghee lamp, especially at the noon Artik. Generally, synthetic camphor is used, since natural camphor is very expensive. If you can get the real camphor, then that's nice. Otherwise, the synthetic can be used. Just it should be good enough quality that it burns nicely and properly. So the camphor lamp generally is only offered at noontime as it has a cooling effect. So generally we see it's not used in the Mangal Artik or the evening Artik, but the noon Artik it'll be offered. Yes. Yeah, Nisringa Deva is always hot, so camphor lamp is always offered like that. Also, you see sometimes for festivals, unless one is very expert at the lamps, then like outside where it may be windy and that, it may be easier to use camphor lamps than to use ghee lamps. And in these lamps, and they may have many, many, you know, they can be single lamps, it can have 5 wicks, it can have 7, 9, 11, or, you know, however big it is. Some of them go up to 108. Like that. So depending upon the occasion, on the festival or ordinary day or the time of the day, your main Artik should have bigger lamps, you know, at least 5. Smaller Artiks may have less, like this. You know, festivals may have more. So you can offer a variety of lamps. Like at a big festival, you offer a camphor lamp, then you may offer, you know, a single lamp, and then one with 5, and then, you know, one that looks like an Ananta Sesh, another one that looks like this, or a chakra, or, you know, different kinds of lamps, kurma. So many kinds of lamps can be offered. So the, like that, lamps can be, are a very prominent part of the Artik. That's kind of the main item. So when you're offering, also you can consider that the other items are generally quicker. So in planning your time of the Artik, you can give more time for the lamp so that you have more time for showing it, because you can't move it as fast as other items. So you should always understand the lamp will take more time in the Artik. Something like flowers is very quick. Incense can be quite quick. You know. Number 31. Counteracting inauspicious influences caused by the glances of evil persons. Drishti Upasarana. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, precautions should always be taken so that demons and atheists cannot harm the body of the Lord. Madhyalila 24.334 purport. Krishna Kshetrapu writes, to dispel inauspicious influences, the Hari Bhakti Vilas recommends waving the conch 3 times above the head of the deity. Alternatively, especially in special ceremonies such as Abhishek, you may wave a small dish containing mustard seeds, salt, and neem leaves before the deity. More generally, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, we should undertake all kinds of precautions to protect the deities. In particular, metal gates should be installed to protect them from harm during times when they are unattended. Also, a fire extinguisher or fire blanket should be present in the deity room within easy reach of pujaris. So that should always be very much considered when designing your deity facilities, that the deities can be protected. This is always very important. You know, you see that devotees, they have facility to lock their doors and this and that, but then the deity facilities, many times, they can't be closed. All they have is a curtain. So the idea is one should protect, either by either having devotees who are trained to protect the deities, or by having just physical facilities that protect the deities. But in some way or another, you should make arrangement that the deities can be kept protected, especially in the daytime, if they're open and unattended and guests come. They shouldn't just be there, because people may walk up on the altar. It has not been an uncommon thing. Not so often, but it has happened that people just come in and see, don't know what's going, walk up onto the altar to take a closer look and stuff like that. So one should protect the deities from such kind of intrusions. Like that. Seems that also this offering of argya has that effect also. Because it waving the conch three times above the head of the deities. Okay, any questions on any of this up to now? Okay, then next 32, offering food, naivedya. So this is quite lengthy. Okay. Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, preparing food for the Lord and partaking of the prasad are very important aspects of Krishna consciousness, as the following quotations indicate. Quote, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased because he saw how nicely so many varieties of food were prepared for Krishna. Actually, all kinds of prasad are prepared for Krishna, not for the people, but the devotees partake of the prasad with great pleasure. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, 364 purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of all the methods employed in cooking and offering food to Krishna. Indeed, he was so pleased that he said, frankly, I will personally take the lotus feet of anyone who can offer Krishna such nice food and place those lotus feet on my head, birth after birth. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila, 365. From the excellence of the arrangements, Madhavendra Puri understood by dedication that only the best food was offered. Understood by deduction that only the best food was offered. In other words, he could see by all the other arrangements and what was the quality and the menu and different things, and he could understood that only the best things were being used. So even by seeing, one can tell. I remember there was... Who was telling me? I don't remember if it was Bhakti Trumaj or if it was Bhavananda. That there was many, many preparations that they were offering to Prabhupada. And they wanted to know what was what. So they would pick up the pot and they would smell it. And then Prabhupada saw this and said, what are you doing? And he says, well, I'm smelling it to figure out what it is. And he said, understanding what something is by smell, that's for animals. They smell everything. Humans tell by looking. So he said, you have to look at the preparation and understand what it is. Like that. That is the... means, of course, maybe if you have some oil or that, you know, but the point is if you have a sabji, you understand whether it's, you know, a cauliflower with cheese, or it's an eggplant, or it's, you know, something else, by looking at it rather than by smelling it. So by looking, then he could tell that everything must be very, very nice by seeing all the other arrangements, and that was first class, so then he could understood that the bhoga that was being offered was also first class. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes here, devotees should become expert cooks so that only first-class preparations are offered to the deity. If in doubt, don't offer. The simple test is to ask yourself, would I offer this to my spiritual master if he was personally present? If you know a preparation is unofferable due to being burned or oversalted, for example, you should not offer it to the deities or the spiritual master. like that. So it's not just, well, something has to be offered and this is all we have. Of course, if you have that much devotion, then maybe you can do it. I mean, it was, what is it, Shrutadeva was giving Krishna, I think, banana peels and throwing away the banana. But of course, because of his devotion, Krishna was eating the banana peels. So we should not expect that we have so much devotion, therefore Krishna is going to eat something that we know is not proper. And see, Shrutadeva didn't know that he was throwing away the banana and offering Krishna the banana peel. He wasn't thinking, yes, I have so much devotion, and just see, I'm offering Krishna the banana peels and he's eating them. But he was so ecstatic that he didn't know what was going on. So he peeled the bananas, threw away the banana, and gave Krishna the peels. And because of that innocence and that devotion, Krishna was accepting that. If he had known he was throwing away the bananas, he would have not done it. He would have given Krishna the bananas and thrown away the peel. So if we know something is improper, then we should not offer it. Okay. Yes.
If, for example, if you burnt rice or something, you don't have anything else. How then?
It depends upon how badly something is. You know, if it's just something, it's okay. But then, if it's too much, where it actually has the burnt fragrance and all that, better to cook more rice for the offering. Yes.
Then you can like make adjustments by taking that glass of water to destroy
all the good. Oh, that if it's been offered and all that, then yeah, one can take what part is there. Like if you find that, you know, half of it is charcoal and the, you know, half is charcoal, half is uncooked and the other half is okay. Then you take the part that's okay. You know? Like that. But, yeah. And if everybody tastes it and goes, this is wonderful, then we know Krishna ate it. And if even that part, the devotees taste it and it's not very good, one can understand that Krishna was not overly impressed with the preparation. So, method of offering. The following excerpt from Chaitanya Charitamrita describes an arrangement for a feast for the Lord. Quote, all the prepared foods were divided into three equal parts. One part was arranged on a metal plate for offering to Lord Krishna. Of the three divisions, one was arranged on a metal plate, and the other two were arranged on plantain leaves. These leaves were not bifurcated, and they were taken from a banana tree that held at least 32 bunches of bananas. The two plates are filled very nicely with the kinds of food described below. Okay, so in other words, the arrangement also should be very, very nice. One should have a very nice plate on which to offer it. So here is, for the deity, it was being put on a metal plate, so that would have been a bell metal plate. It would not have been a stainless steel plate. It would have been bell metal. Right? In those days, they were not blessed with stainless steel back in those days. So metal plate meant it would have either been gold, silver, or bell metal, you know, depending upon the arrangements. And silver was not uncommon. Even when I came to India in the mid-70s, then it was not uncommon that people would feed you with solid silver glasses and plates. No, it was just the common things they would use. The glass itself, without anything in it, would weigh 400 grams, you know, like that. Then let alone when you put something inside of it. You know, the plate would weigh 1 kilo. Because silver was very cheap then. Only I think in the late 70s then the price jumped. So before it was very common to use plates of these things. And then the plantain leaves, the banana leaves, it means it was a full banana leaf and it was not cut down the middle. So that meant you had the full leaf. And it says 32 bunches. That means a very big bunch. So that was a very healthy tree, means the banana leaf would have been very healthy. would have been a very big banana leaf. So on that, then you could put a lot of preparations, you know. Then you could very nicely serve the Lord. Srila Prabhupada further writes, it is advisable that food being offered to the deity be covered when taken from the kitchen to the deity room. In that way, others may not see it. Those who are not accustomed to following the advanced regulative devotional principles may desire to eat the food, and that is an offense. Therefore, no one should be given a chance to even see it. However, when it is brought before the deity, it must be uncovered. Right? Now, Prabhupada mentions that because it's not necessarily obvious to the, you know, the Western mind. That's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 4.124 purport. Then as a footnote, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, while offering the bhoga, you should be careful not to think of enjoying the food once yourself. The ideal example of feeling repentance for having such thoughts is Srila Madhavendra Puri in relationship to Kirchor Gopinath. This is quoted. A Paramahamsa like Madhavendra Puri is always satisfied in the loving service of the Lord. Material hunger and thirst cannot impede his activities. When he desired to taste a little sweet rice offered to the deity, he considered that he had committed an offense by desiring to eat what was being offered to the deity. It's from Madhya Lila 4.124 purport, same purport. Oh, that's from the... That's the shloka. Yeah, and the other is the purport. So the idea is that it should be covered. You make, and there should be some nice kind of cloth, thin, light, something that can be easily washed or rinsed so it can be used again very quickly. And it should cover completely the plate, not just kind of here and there and everything sticks out the sides. It should nicely cover the plate. So when you carry the plate, then it says here, those who are not accustomed to the advanced regulative devotional principles. Advanced, that means beyond the Vaidhi sadhana, to the Raganuga sadhana. Until one comes to the spontaneous platform, there's every chance when you see something to eat, just immediately the mind just responds with, well, what is that? Is it something that I can eat, this, that? Then the mind first will think, oh, something to eat. You know, what is it? Do I like this and that? Then you kind of notice, well, it is near the deity room and it does kind of look like a very big plate. It's not a stainless steel plate. And, you know, the person is dressed for puja and it is time for the offering, so then maybe this is the Lord's bhoga, and then you think, oh, I shouldn't think like this. Right? So the idea is you cover the plate and it saves us from this kind of embarrassment. Yes.
When someone does look at the bhoga and he kind of has that mentality, who gets the karma from that? The person who's lusting over it, or the person who cooked, or the person who's offering?
What about the person who's eating, or the person who's distributing? Means the whole thing is that persons who don't have the proper attitude shouldn't be in the deity room or in the kitchen where you'll be making the plates, the deity's plates. The point is between the place where you make the plate and the deity room, that's where you want to be careful, because that is harder to control. With the kitchen where it is and where the offering may be, many times you have to walk through, you know, common hallways, or, you know, other devotees may be there coming to wash pots or do other activities in the puja area. So then to protect from that offense, then one covers. But otherwise, if it's when you're making the plate, then there's people standing around and, you know, leering at the plate, then that kind of things, these people shouldn't be allowed, you know, in the whole area, you know. So that's the best, you know. But otherwise, and whoever makes the thing, then they're the ones who get the reaction. The devotee doesn't take the time to cover the plate, people look at it, the person who didn't cover the plate, they get the reaction, you know. Things like that, or person's making the plate, there's people like that there, he doesn't tell them to leave, you know, like that, then he gets the reaction. Otherwise, if all precaution is taken and people are, you know, with this kind of mentality of seeing, then they'll get the reaction. So it depends upon kind of whose fault it is, you know, or any combination. Okay. Then, the essential position of the spiritual master in the deity offering is illustrated by the following quotes. For offering prasadam, simply prayers to the spiritual master is sufficient. The process is that everything is offered to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master is supposed to offer the same foodstuff to the Lord. When a thing is offered to the spiritual master, he immediately offers to the Lord. That is the system. And as we come by the parampara system, it is our duty to go through the right channel, namely, first the spiritual master, then Lord Chaitanya, and then Krishna. So when we chant prayers, we do this, Bandeham Shri Guru, and gradually to the Goswamis, then to Lord Chaitanya, and then to Radha and Krishna. That is the praying system. But offering the prasadam to present everything before the spiritual master, whose picture is also on the altar, means that the spiritual master will take care of offering the foodstuff to the Lord. Therefore, simply by chanting the prayer to the spiritual master, everything will be complete. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 28th May, 1968. Yes, you may say the prayer to the spiritual master three times, and also Namo Brahmanya, prayer three times. Also, you may, after offering to spiritual master, offer to Lord Chaitanya by saying prayer Namo Mahavaranyaya, etc., three times. And then offer to Krishna thrice, Namo Brahmanya Devaya. That is letter from Srila Prabhupada, 22nd March, 1968. So this is the system, is that one is offering prayers to the spiritual master, then to Lord Chaitanya with Namo Mahavaranyaya, and then to Krishna with Namo Brahmanya Devaya. Then after that, then we may chant the Gayatri mantras, if one has, and then that is the offering. So that is the essential part of the offering. One may get more technical than that, but this part must always remain in place. Yes. It's also a mantra through which the deities eat. The initiated Gayatris, then the deities accept offerings through those. Like that. It's not important to chant other Gayatris that we don't have initiation into. Like that. One generally uses the mantras that one has received. Like that, one can offer the Gayatri that matches with the deity. One can do that, one can chant the whole Gayatri mantra, you know, all the mantras, or one can chant just the Brahma Gayatri, the first line. Like that. Also, or one can also just do Gopal. Gopal mantra is also very common, used for all the deities. Like that. Then another quote here. Whatever is offered to the deity actually goes through the spiritual master. The spiritual master offers to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya offers it to Krishna. Then Radha Krishna eats, or Jagannath eats. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eats. Then the spiritual master eats, and it becomes Mahaprasadam. So when you are offering something, you think like that and chant the Gayatri mantra, and then everything is complete. At last, ring the bell, take out the plate, and wipe the place where the plate was kept. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 16th June, 1969. So, you're chanting the mantras and saying the Gayatri, and through that Gayatri, then the offering is going on and they are accepting. So that's what Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here. Yes. Can? Why not? It's a modern term called multitasking. You understand? Or? Yes. Because here you're chanting the Gayatri for the deity to eat through. You're not chanting the Gayatri specifically as your Sandhya Bandhana, as your chanting of the Gayatri specifically for the three times of the day. This is specifically meant for the offering for the deity. So then in that one could meditate like that. But otherwise it's just that Krishna is accepting that offering. Not necessarily that you have to see him pick up each mouthful and how he eats the pakura and all these kind of things. Say again, when you chant Gayatri, that is? Why it's ringing the bell as opposed to like washing your feet or doing ashram or something. But then they say what offering that was being offered to the Lord with the Gayatri? It was a boga offering or lamps or padyam. Huh? Boga offering. So does that mean it's a snack or it's a full meal or... I've never heard of that. Why would wrapping the string around your thumb? Oh. We haven't heard it since. It seems that it died out along with the person who dreamed it up. Yeah. So what has that got to do with the bell by wrapping the thread around your thumb? Offering? They're all offerings. But that's no. You're meditating upon the three forms of the Lord. Sambandha Adideva, Prayojana Adideva, and Abhideya Adideva. That's what's happening in the sixth and seventh Gayatri. Especially the sixth. Means they're all offering. Because you're dealing with Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Someone's... means offering is there, means it's an offering of prayers. So prayers are also an offering. So it's not that, see, maybe that was being... he was asking why and that, and he was a very hungry boy, and the only thing he could understand is if something's being offered that can be eaten, then it is of value, and prayers and other things are not of great importance. So therefore it was compared to an offering, just like offering, you know, a 10-foot-tall stuffed capsicum to the Lord. Huh? One truck of cream cheese inside a stuffed capsicum. Seems to have... Interesting, he's reacting to these things in different ways. He thinks it's funny because he's also Hungarian. He's appreciating it because he would like to eat it. Like that. So like this it goes on. He's laughing because he's seen his mother make them, but not with a truckload. So like this. It's... yeah. Notice here he mentions, take out the plate and wipe the place where the plate was kept. It's very important, is that wherever prasadam is put down, that place is to be wiped. One may say, well, it's not contaminated, like where we just kept the prasad here. Someone ate over here, we kept the pots for serving in another place. When those pots are picked up, that place has to be wiped also. It's not that because prasad was kept there, so the place becomes prasade. So it's contaminated in a certain aspect, a subtle aspect, but it's contaminated. Otherwise, if you don't wipe that plate, the next offering that you bring and put down, because the table is prashade, the boga touches it, it becomes prashade and it's unofferable. So the place always has to be wiped. Prabhupada said this is the one of the symptoms of a Brahmin, is that after eating, he always cleans the place where they ate. This is one of the symptoms. Right? And a non-Brahmin will think, either if he is of a level where he thinks it should be cleaned, but he will think someone else should do it. And then there are those who are even less qualified, is they won't even think that it needs to be cleaned. What's the problem? Right? I picked up all the little chunks of stuff on the floor, and, you know, now it's okay. So this is all part of the spiritual culture. This is cleanliness. In these letters, Srila Prabhupada describes the essential this Krishna Kshetra Prabhu. In these letters, Srila Prabhupada describes the essential activities in offering food. In more elaborate worship, you may reinforce your awareness of being the spiritual master's servant by offering the Lord additional services. For example, sense impurities may arise due to subtle entities in the atmosphere or faults in the preparation. You may follow certain procedures to purify, spiritualize, and protect the food before offering it to the Lord. This is accomplished by prokshana, sprinkling with water, mantra, mudra, and meditation. It is also customary to call the Lord from his throne to his eating place and offer him a seat and water for washing his feet, hands, and mouth. You may then present the naivedya to the Lord while chanting his mula mantra. After the meal, you may again offer water for the Lord to wash his feet, hands, and mouth. Like that. This will all come up when we get into the technical aspects of the worship. Then we have duration of offering. Srila Prabhupada instructs us in detail on how to please the Lord. He writes, "Leave Krishna's plate for 15 to 20 minutes or more, not more than half an hour." Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 25th January 1968. Unlike other, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, unlike other boga offerings, naivedya as the 15th offering. As the 15th upachara offered in the morning worship is usually left very briefly for the Lord to enjoy. During this offering, you may remain in the Lord's presence, chanting with eyes closed, the Gayatri Mantra while the Lord eats. In other words, there's two considerations of the offering. One is the official time at before an artik, you know, a main artik for darshan, that'll be public. Then that plate will be a main meal or snack, and that will be brought in, put in for 15 minutes, then taken, cleaned, and then you open for artik. Now, when you're worshipping the small deities or the Shaligram, then you may have a small plate of just some fruit sweet. That will be different from the offering later. That will be put in front of the deity, sprinkled, purified, and you just chant the mantras and that, and when you're finished, you can just take it away. You don't have to leave it for 15 or 20 minutes. But that's just specifically for this time of offering. You know, either here or when the Lord takes rest at night, you offer some sweet, you know, some kheer or something. Okay, then 33, offering spices, mukavasha. You may offer aromatic seeds such as anise, fennel, cardamom, or clove, as well as candied ginger, rock candy, and dried rose petals in various mixtures. So that means the spices, they freshen the mouth. They also aid in the digestion. Then 34, offering betel, tambula. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes the wonderful way in which the Gopal deity was served. Quote, "The deity was first offered many varieties of food, then scented drinking water in new pots, and then water for washing the mouth. Finally, pan mixed with a variety of spices was offered. After the last offering of tambula and pan, bhog artik was performed. Finally, everyone offered various prayers and then obeisances, falling flat before the deity in full surrender." Madhya Lila, 465 through 66. So it says here, varieties of food, that's naivedya, and then scented drinking water in new pots, that's paniyam. So when you do naivedyam, idam paniyam, means nice food and nice drinks. These are offered to the Lord. Then after that, then water for washing the mouth. Then spices, means the mouth is washed first, then the spices, and then the pan. Like that. This is important. One doesn't give the spices at the end of the meal before the person has been able to wash the hands and all that. All right, that understood? And also means one doesn't chew pan during the meal. Yes. Y'all understood? Means you cooked 100 kilos of rice. Now you offer, 200 grams to the deity. So now do you have to take that 200 grams and then mix it with the 100 kilos of rice to make that into prasadam? Like that. Or is it automatically prasadam? It depends upon whether you're a Hindu or a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Like that. If you're a Hindu, you must mix it in with the 100 kilos, because otherwise Krishna somehow or another cannot figure out that you cooked that for him also. He is not that intelligent. So therefore, you are very intelligent, so then you take it and you mix it in. Somehow or another, by taking a little bit and mixing with the other, somehow or another, the rest of it magically becomes. I guess it's like putting a drop of Ganga water in a pot of Ganga water. A pot of plain water becomes Ganga water. I guess it's that principle. But the point is whatever's cooked, Krishna's eating the whole thing. That's why when the offering is being made, no one should be coming along and making their own plates and coming and seeing and doing and playing around. It should be that the things that have been cooked are being kept very nicely. They should not be put in into the buckets for serving and all that until the offering has been made. Like that, because the Lord is going to accept all that. No, so the whole idea is whatever's cooked, the Lord eats everything. On his plate, of course, you take some and you put there, but he's eating what's on the plate plus whatever's in the pots. Right? Unless, of course, you're Hindu, that means then God can't figure out what's in the next room, so you got to do it for him. Yes. The betel nuts are nuts. They grow on these trees here. And they're small and round, and they got kind of like they're white and red. And then you cut them into fine pieces. Right? So that's a nut. The pan is a leaf that grows on a creeper, very soft leaf. It's astringent. And then they put so many spices on it, they can put the betel nut inside there also. Like that. And then that's all folded up, and then that's offered. So the betel nut is the tambula, but then that's put in with the pan, with the leaf. So generally they just call it pan, because it means it's got the betel nut in it. Or you can say it the other way around. It's the betel nut, the tambula. But that means it includes that, because you're going to put it with that. The leaf is not intoxicating, it's the nut that's intoxicating. The leaf is many times used in Ayurvedic medicine as a carrier for certain medicines. You grind it up and take the juice. So it's the nut that carries, has this slight intoxicating effect. The nut, and especially if you mix lime, then that gives it much more of a kick.
Is it okay to eat a pan leaf with just the spices or not?
Is it okay to eat just a pan leaf with
the
spices? without the betel nut. If there's, you know, some medicinal purpose for it, yeah. Or just, one could. You know, technically one could, but otherwise one generally doesn't bother. Unless there's some medicine you have to take, and that is the medium through which you have to take it. You know, now look at this. See, every day at this time, this cat walks through to check everything. You don't have to bother it. Hey, I said don't bother it. Now the thing ran in the house. Huh? See, it comes through every day looking for mice. I'm just saying how regular it is. Yeah. Means it's very regular. See, they work very regulated. You know, it's material sadhana. It's a particular sadhana worked out by the three modes of material nature. Huh? They're very regular. Okay. Krishna Kshetra mentions that sometimes you can find these betel leaves and that at the Indian groceries, but not always. He says sometimes the wrong ones are there. So then after offering the betel nut, then the offering for the deities is finished. The boga is finished. Then it says you may offer the Lord's prasad to the devotees, to his associates, and beginning with the spiritual master. Okay. Any other questions on the offering? Okay, then offering the Lord a resting place, Divya Shaya. 35. You may offer the Lord a comfortable couch or bed to relax on, as Srila Prabhupada describes. Quote, at the proper time, there should be arrangements so that the Lord may take rest in bed. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 24.334 purport. So he mentions here items 35 through 38 can apply to both morning puja, before the darshan artik, and afternoon worship. In the afternoon, in addition to the items mentioned, you may offer fresh clothes and additional ornaments. Couch mentioned here can also refer to the paryankasana, or the asana from which the Lord gives darshan during the day. Okay. At such times, it is understood the Lord is lounging in a couch, or paryanka. Means the darshan can, the place where the deities are standing can either be what is called a mantrasana, which means that it's the place official where there's Lord is received, it's very formal and all that, or it can be understood as the paryankasana, where it means he's just like a couch, you just some, you know, big place with pillows and all that, a very nice sitting place, and he can be there and give darshan and, you know, just enjoy himself like this. So that's why you'll see many major temples and that they will have pillows on the altar along with the deity. Like if you look carefully, Srinath, and Dwarkadish, pictures of him, you'll always see pillows on the side. Here also on Radha Madhava's altar, they're always, when they were small, they always used to have pillows and that on the altar. So after all the worship and having something to eat, then he's taken to a place where he can rest nicely. Then 36, arranging the Lord's hair. Kesha Prasadhana. Srila Prabhupada writes in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, quote, the Lord's hair should be combed and decorated. That's from Madhya Lila, 24.334 purport. Srimati Radharani's and other Shakyas' hair should be braided, never loose. Occasionally the braids may show in the front. Generally wigs made of synthetic hair are used. Hair on small deities is not necessarily required. With appropriate crown and ear ornaments, small deities often look best without wigs. So it depends upon their size. If you can put a nice wig, the deities are small so it looks attractive, then that's fine. But otherwise, sometimes you can't get a small enough wig and it's too bulky. then it's better with just nice crowns and turbans and earrings and feathers and like these kind of things, peacock feathers and other, then it makes a nice arrangement. But the hair should be combed. If they do have these wigs, then they must be combed nicely and fixed nicely, yes.
Is that okay if it's real hair or not?
I don't know. Here he mentions generally synthetic hair are used. I don't know about real hair. I'm not sure if they use it there. Like in Tirupati, everyone shaves their head, but I don't know that it's used for the deity. What's offered to the deity means it's an offering there, but I don't know that the deity, they make wigs out of it for the deity. Oh, I see. That's in Badrinath or in Tirupati? So he said they make belts out of it. He doesn't wear this. I think in South, no deities wear wigs. Like that. Another thing that they use that he doesn't mention here, what I've seen that they usually use in Bengal, is chamara. They use black chamara and wigs out of, make the wigs out of that. And then that gives the very distinctive Bengali look with the kind of like frizzy hair. Like that. Yes. Chamara. Yeah, yeah. So that would be the old tradition. If they make wigs for the deities, they would be made out of chamara. Because the chamara hair is considered pure, while human hair is not considered so pure. That. So it's just like bones are impure but the conscious pure, or stool is impure but cow dung is pure. So hair is impure but the chamara hair, the hair of the yak cow. Also the tails of the cows are used for brushes for the deity. Like that. So this is considered pure. Yes. Why must the hair be braided? The ladies will always keep their hair bound. Like that. That's always, it's a sign of chastity, or, you know, that everything's going well in the family circles. They may only have their hair open, you know, when they're taking a bath or someone in the family died and they're mourning. But otherwise, then it's always kept braided. Like Draupadi. Her hair was open. She said she won't tie it until, you know, the wallas that untied it are killed. You know, like that. It means when the wife or the guy who untied my hair is crying with her hair open because her husband has been killed, then I will tie my hair. You know. But of course, that is the Kshatriya women. They have that kind of, you know, Shakti. So the women always keep their hair tied, you know, like that. Right? Loose hair is considered not very chaste. That's why in the Western civilization, loose hair is so much valued. Because you want to show your lack of chastity. So hair should be loose, you know. It means everyone should know you're not chaste. I mean, it's, you know, if you're unchaste and no one knows, then it's pretty boring. But if you're unchaste and everybody knows, then life is more exciting. And so therefore, in the Vedic culture, they always keep the hair bound. One would see even the Kshatriyas in that, because they keep their hair long, they would also tie it. Yes. Yeah, it could be put in a bun or things like that. Many times it would be braided and put in a bun. But whatever, these are details. The main point is it must be bound, the hair. But as far as I remember, then the braiding is the most common, I think, in Vrindavan. You know, the Yeah, the braiding is the most common, because I just remember this, is because then someone was reading a passage, yeah. Like that. Braiding, I think, is the most common. Yes. Like that there, you know, hair, because their hair is not that long. One may have very, very long wigs, but that's generally their hair is much shorter. It's not as long as the women's hair. I mean, girls from families that really know how to take care of their hair and all that, who know the science, it's not uncommon. They have hair down to their knees. When they braid it, it's down to their knees. It's at least to their waist, if not to their knees. It's not uncommon. Like that. So the men won't have hair that long. You know, their long hair is not that long. You know, unless, of course, they're a baba, then it may be 12 feet long. That's another thing. But it'll be matted, you know? Yes. Does their power of austerity go into the hair of the babas? Now we have got onto a sidetrack here. Beehive. Yeah, the yogis keep, that's one of the places they can keep the power. So generally in the hair is a good place to keep it. You know? I mean, but what has that got to do with? It does, but even after they get, you know, older and they may shave their head or something, it doesn't, still they, that power is there. The chastity is not necessarily kept in the hair, that power. You know, they may stay there on their own, but they haven't specifically put it there. You know, then you understand? And maybe some power is there, but specifically the yogis place the power in their hair. Like that. But we could check, we could find out if there is some other subtleties going on here. You've heard, you know? No. Your mother didn't tell you anything about the immense potencies that you're hiding in your hair or something? No? I don't know, I'll have to check from other sources. See, generally they keep the hair because it's more attractive. It's not so much that they're keeping all their shaktis in there and they're going to stop the sun and moon moving and all that with their hair and all that. You understand? Means in your natural course, things are just very natural, right? Hair is kept because it looks nice. Understand? Only when you start getting to strange aberrations like the yogis and all that, then they get into these weird things. You understand? But otherwise, the pure forms of karma are just basically reflections of the spiritual realm. So the ladies have long hair because Krishna likes ladies with long hair. So in the spiritual realm, the ladies have long hair. So here, reflected here in the Vedic culture, they also have long hair. Understand? Well, Krishna likes his Brahmins to have, you know, shaved heads, you know, to do the puja. So in the spiritual realm, they have that, and also here they have that. Understand? So it's all reflection of there. It's all very natural. It comes back down to basically Krishna likes it like that. Then to give the, you know, inquisitive, doubtful mind, then all kinds of metaphysics are also included within it. You know, like Krishna likes seekers. But, you know, but why? And so then if we say, well, because of the Brahmarandra, the soft patch here, and you keep the hair here, then it protects it because that's the top chakra, the thousand-petaled lotus, and all the, you know, it keeps the kundalinis in line. And then, oh, no problem. I understand. Yes, now I accept, I understand. If we just say Krishna likes seekers, then it's, huh? What? You know? So therefore, these things are given like that. Yes. Because they're in the mode, Kshatriyas keep their hair because being in the mode of passion, they also have to look good. You know, the Kshatriya women aren't going to really be overjoyed with a bald-headed, you know, king, you know. You understand? Their whole lifestyle is passion. So the Kshatriyas themselves are physically very beautiful and attractive and very powerful. So they also have, you know, they keep their hair and like that. You know, and the Brahmins, especially if they're doing puja and all that, then they all keep secrets. Does that make some sense? Okay, anything else? Okay. We'll end here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.